In the beginning is the Veda. One part of the Veda teaches fruit of work, another part transcendental knowledge, and another part loving devotional service. The individual souls, bewildered by Maya, are situated in different states of existence. Some are very bewildered, some are a little enlightened, and some are very enlightened. In this way, the conditioned souls have different kinds of intelligence. The Veda teaches all these classes of souls. Although one may consider that the souls have an infinite variety of natures, still they are grouped into three broad categories. 1. Those qualified to perform fruit of work, karma. 2. Those eligible for transcendental knowledge, jnana. And 3. Those eligible to engage in loving devotional service, prema, to the Supreme Lord. The Vedas thus describe these three categories of eligibility. The Veda's description of what should and should not be done by these three classes of living entities constitute Vaidha Dharma, the rules of religion. When one actively performs pious deeds, that is called Vaidhi Pravriti. They who do not follow the rules of Vaidha commit sinful acts. Therefore, living entities should always avoid actions that violate these rules and regulations. They who are outside the jurisdiction of the Vedas are called by the name Mlecha, and by other names also. The conclusion, then, is that three classes of living entities are qualified to follow the Veda. For their benefit, the great sages have written many books to supplement the hymns of the Veda. Manu and 20 other sages thus wrote the Dharma Shastras to benefit the persons eligible to perform pious fruit of work, karma. Different philosophers wrote books of logic and philosophy to benefit the persons eligible for philosophical speculation, jnana. The great devotees wrote the Puranas and pure tantras to teach the persons eligible to engage in devotional service, bhakti, and to guide their actions. This is the nature of all the Vedic literatures. The philosophy of the Mimamsakas is not seen anywhere in the original scriptures. Every point the Mimamsakas claim shows the superiority of their idea is easily thrown Every point the Mimamsakas claim shows the superiority of their idea is easily thrown into a dark hole of counter-arguments and doubts. In all the scriptures, the Uttara Mimamsa, Vedanta philosophy, is most clearly shown. Bhagavad Gita, the teaching of karma that ignores jnana, The teaching of karma that ignores jnana is an atheistic kind of karma, and that teaching should be rejected. In the same way, the teaching of karma and jnana that ignores bhakti is atheistic karma and jnana. There are only three kinds of yoga: karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. That is the Vaishnava description of the Veda's teachings. The individual soul, bewildered by Maya, first takes shelter of fruit of work, karma. Then he takes shelter of karma yoga. At the end, when he comes to the conclusion of karma yoga and jnana yoga, he takes shelter of bhakti yoga. The soul bewildered by Maya does not ascend only one step in the staircase. A Ascending only one step of the staircase, he cannot enter the temple of devotional service. What is taking shelter of fruit of work, karma? Fruit of work is the activity performed by the body and mind while one is alive in the body. Fruit of work is of two kinds, one auspicious and two inauspicious. By performing auspicious work, one attains an auspicious result. By performing inauspicious work, one attains an inauspicious result. Inauspicious work is called either papa, sin, or vikarma, evil work. When one does not perform auspicious work, that is called akarma. Both of these are bad. Auspicious work is good. Work is of three kinds, one nitya, regular, naimittika, occasion, and kamya, desired. Kamya work, where the desire for personal benefit is very prominent, should be avoided. Nitya and naimittika work, on the other hand, is work prescribed by scripture, considering what should and should not be done. The scriptures explain what is nitya, naimittika, and kamya work. Akarma, failure to do auspicious work, and vikarma, inauspicious work, are not the same as karma, auspicious work. When one avoids kamya work, then his work is nitya or naimittika. Work that brings auspiciousness. Work that brings auspiciousness to the body, the mind, and other people, or humanity at large, is called nitya work. Everyone should perform nitya work. When work prompted by a temporary circumstance is like nitya work, in this way it is called naimittika work. Chanting Gayatri, offering obeisances and cleanliness, are activities that maintain one's body and the welfare of society at large. So also do honest dealings and protection of they who should be protected. All these are nitya work, duties to one's deceased parents, like other duties, and atonement of sins are all naimittika work. Nitya and naimittika work bring good to the world. Therefore, the great sages order that such auspicious work be performed. Considering the different natures of the human beings, they thus describe what is called the Varnashram system. According to their natural tendency for work, human beings are thus divided into four classes. One, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. In this material world, there are also four other divisions called ashramas. The four ashramas are Grihastha, Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. They who are fond of performing akarma and vikarma work are called Antyaja, the lowest, and Nirashrama, outside the Varnashram system. The different Varna classes are determined according to birth, nature, work, and qualities. Whenever the Varnas are determined by birth, the meaning of the Varnashram system is lost. The different ashramas are determined according to these states: being married, not being married, and the renunciation of association with women. They who are married are in the Grihastha ashram. They who are not married are in the Brahmachari ashram. They who have renounced association with women are in the Vanaprastha and Sannyas ashrams. Of all the ashrams, the sannyas ashrama is the best. Of all the varnas, the brahmana varna is the best. This is all described in the crest jewel of all scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17-15-21, in the following words: Varnanam ashramanam cha janma bhumyanusharina asan prakritayo nirinam niracher nichot. Nichotamotamai. The various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures manifested in the situation of the individual's birth. Samodhamas tapasaucham santosha kshantirajavam madbhaktis cha dayas satyam brahma prakritayas tvimam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the Brahmanas. Tejo Balam Driti Shauryam Titik Shaudaryam Udyama Shteryam Brahmanyam Aishwaryam Kshata Prakritayas Tvimam Tvimaha. Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the Brahmins, and leadership are the natural qualities of the Kshatriyas. Astikyam dana nishtha cha atambha brahma sevanam atushtir arto pachayer aisha prakritayas tvimaha. Faith in Vedic civilization, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to the Brahmanas, and perpetually desiring to accumulate more money are the natural qualities of the Vaishyas. Perpetually desiring. Shushru shunam dvijagavam devanam chapyamayaya tatra labhena santosha shudra prakritayas tvimaha. Service without duplicity to the Brahmanas, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service are the natural qualities of Shudras. Asaucham anritam steyam nastikyam shukshka vigraha kama krodas chatarshascha sabhavo sabhavon tavasayinam. Dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the varnashram system. Ahimsa satyam asteyam akama krodha lobhata lobhata bhuta priya hiteha cha dharmoyam sarva varnika. Non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. In the assembly of the wise, everyone can understand the meaning of the scriptures. Therefore, I shall not give any comment on these words. I will only say this: the duties of varna and ashrama are the root of following the scriptures. The scriptures, rules, and regulations, vaidha. A country is impious to the degree it does not follow varnashram. means he's been asked a question about the Brahmanas are chanting Gayatri. It means the Brahma Gayatri, and that's their japa, that's the sadhana. And he doesn't see that the Vaishnavas are necessarily doing that. Because before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Brahma Gayatri was not given to those who weren't, you know, in the social standing where they would be accepted as Brahmins, or at least Dwijas. Traditionally Dwijas, but sometimes we see it's just Brahmins and practice. So the Vaishnavas aren't practicing that. The Pancharatra Gayatris are there, like that. And, you know, they don't wear a thread. They don't, you know, so many of these symptoms of varnashram they're not following. So then the question has been, you know, then what is this Vaishnava religion? Where is it talked about? You know, so because this person was very much born in a Brahmin family, knew all these things, very educated, in a very good position, wealth, and all these things. And then and a good singer, so they knew the Raga Raginis, so he knew the whole, you know, so many sciences and knowledge and good birth and all that. So then he can't understand, and he became quite popular amongst the Vaishnavas because of singing kirtan and all that. So now he's come to Navadvip, and so he's asking this question about why is it that we see that the Vaishnavas don't seem to be following, you know, so many of the technical points of the varnashram as he is accustomed. You know, the more, it means nice things, but at the same time as they're more technical duties of the varnas. You know? And so then the question is coming up. So he's trying to bring him to the point of actually understanding the subject matter. See, if someone starts saying something about varnashram, and then you immediately deal with that point, still their understanding of varnashram is not right. Their understanding of Dharma and the scriptures is not correct. So then, no matter how much you discuss with them, there's going to be a problem because they have the wrong understanding. So therefore, this whole conversation is so that the proper, what is the position of the varnashram system? What is the position of Vaidha and how much important it is in the whole human society? So basically what he's pointing out is that without varnashram you don't have human society. Like that. But the nice thing about it, this is just a side comment, the nice thing about it, devotional service isn't restricted to the human society, as we see in the fifth canto, that the vanaras and others, forest dwellers, then they're talking about their devotion to the Lord, and even though they're uncultured and improperly behaved and don't speak so nicely, and you know they're rough in their behavior, still the Lord accepts their devotion. So that's the thing, is devotional service goes beyond all this. But for the proper running of society, these are the basis, is that you have activity must be there. So there's three kinds of activity given in the Vedas: karma, jnana, and bhakti. So then, for those who are too engrossed in fruit of work, karma is there. For those who are have some problem with fruit of work and are interested in jnana, then that section is there. But for those who are actually properly intelligent, then bhakti is the thing, because karma performed without jnana is not purifying, so that's useless. And jnana on its own actually can't purify you, because there's no activity. It's the activity that means creates something. Like you have a matchbox and a match, and you have the knowledge that this match and this box, they can produce fire. But if you don't rub the two, you don't get the fire. So the knowledge is useless. Right? And if you're just performing the activity without the knowledge, so you know that, okay, match in the box and that, and you're just anywhere, you'll get nothing either. So you have to put the two together, then you get something. But those two together without devotion to the Lord, that's also useless. Because you might have somebody who understands, okay, karma on its own is useless, jnana on its own is useless. So you have to combine. This is called Nishkam Karma Yoga. But that could also be performed by an atheist. Technically it could. It won't be, but it technically could be. But that's also useless. So devotion to the Lord, that's the highest. So in the activities is that you have pious activities, that's the basis of just proper activities. Because that's good for the individual, it's good for others, it's good for the society, it's good for everybody. And if you avoid those, don't perform it, that's not good. And if you go against the scriptures and perform sinful activities, that is all very inauspicious. So these will give bad result. It means anytime you get a bad result, it's from those activities. Unless, of course, the Lord is arranging, like we see with the Pandavas or that. You know, so we understand that these devotees, the acharyas, they haven't performed any improper work. And sometimes then different, not so fortunate situations come up in their activities. But that's for training us, for giving example to us. Otherwise, if everything always went so perfect for them, we would say, well, that's them, so we can't be like that, so why try? You know, there has to be an idea that you could do it. So therefore, then the acharyas live lifestyles or start off, you know, like other living entities, and then in this way then move into to just show it can be done like that. But otherwise bad results are coming from bad activities. So if we ever get bad results in our life, it's not because we're devotees and Krishna's not taking care. No, we've done some bad activity before and the result is coming now. So it's you do an activity, you get a result, that's all. If the result's good, it's because the activity was pious. The result's bad, because the activity was impious. That's all. It's a very simple formula. It's not like you have some, you're cooking, and if you put sugar into it, it'll be sweet. You put salt in, it'll be salty. You know, it's not some mystic thing. It's just you perform proper activities, then you'll get a good result. And if you perform bad activities, you get a bad result. That's all. So, but beyond that, then there is the devotional service. Right? So these activities of piety then are of two, nitya and naimittika. Nitya are those things that should always be done. You know, proper character, proper dealings with others, you know, proper sadhana, all these things, these are nitya, because they go on, they're always going on. Then, you know, in a regular fashion. Then naimittika means things that are pious but are done only occasionally, like the shraddha is only done once a year. Or prayaschitta, that's only done if you do something improper, then you do prayaschitta, otherwise you're not doing it. So these are called naimittika. So then, and then of that, then he's described, so what is this varnashram? This varnashram, that is vaidhi. Vaidha, that's the source of all these things. So then he describes the four varnas and four ashramas. Right? So it's a very clear thing. We can see it's very, very easy to understand, like that.
Raj, he also explained, said something about the third type of activity. There was something mentioned about third.
Oh, kamya. Kamya means just you feel like doing it. Now, I want to do it. You know, it's just like suddenly you want to eat, right? So, let's say you're eating proper things, but you're not eating at a regulated time. So it's not nitya, right? It's not naimittika, because it's still not within the rules. You're doing something that's not really so much against the rules, but it's not for the rules. So it's not exactly impious, but it's not pious. You know what I'm saying? You're taking something pious and using it improperly. You understand? So then, you know, you eat out irregularly, you sleep irregularly, you have children irregularly, all these things. You just feel like it, you have a child, rather than you plan it. Or you just eat whenever you like rather than it's planned and regular. Or, you know, these kind of things. Other than emergency, you know. But, you know, sometimes eating when you're traveling, this, that, or sleeping. You know, these things get out of hand. But, like, producing children, that's not something that you can just say, well, what to do, you know. But, you know, because the result is not so much. You may get spaced out for a day or two, or gets a bad stomach, but you don't have to live with something for 20 years. You know, so it's different. You know, so that's kamya. So kamya should never be done, just because of desire. See, we see it's just the opposite here. This is a very interesting point. I don't know. Did we discuss this? I discussed this with somebody, but I don't know. Did we discuss this in class? No, just about the point is that you have the material world, and if you have desire, a spontaneous desire to do material things, it takes you into the material world. And if you have a spontaneous desire to do things, the spiritual, it takes you that way. So the whole point is you control the material kamya by regulation, by vaidhi. Right? So that brings one to the mode of goodness, and from there, then by practicing devotional service, one will be purified and elevated, and then slowly, slowly, the desire for doing the spiritual activities will come. Like that. So that is the point there. So then what's trying to be established is that regulation must be done. Right? He's explained the aspect of raganuga, but he's now coming down to his question. You know, basically, that the rules and regulations, these are just basic fundamental things that should be done. Just a regular society. Like here, we're talking, we generally have the tendency is like, you know, okay, Brahmins are here, Kshatriyas are here, Vaishyas are a little down there, and then there's some way down there, there's Shudras, right? But here, it actually, means, okay, that may be there if one has come from very elevated top quality, you know, historically, you know, Brahminical family, very high standards and all that. Then you may say, okay, the Shudras may not be so well behaved. But that would be in the more modern context. But here, the last verse he gives, nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. That includes Shudras. So that is the basis on which we start human life. It means just everybody follows that. Right? Then, from there, then within that, then you have Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Well, we start here. If this is not there, then we don't have human society. You know, then the other alternative is this: dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varnashram system. You know, so that's probably a little bit more like what we're used to. So therefore we can understand Shudras are up from where we come from. Like that. And that's a very important thing here. Then we see here that the nature of Shudras, service without duplicity to Brahmanas, means they're not thinking of getting anything in return. To Brahmanas, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service, are the natural qualities of Shudras, not enforced, natural. A real Shudra then likes to serve without, and whatever comes, they accept. So this is a very high standard. Right? Nowadays, you know, you have all this, you know, strikes and different kind of things, you know, things to create, because they're not satisfied with what they get. Of course, they're not being taken care of either, but at the same time, is they're not satisfied. So they're actually lower than Shudras. So what we call someone Shudra, they're not Shudras. Closest thing that I can think of in the modern context is something like an English butler. That's a Shudra, you know, like that. So generally we think of that, that's very, you know, very elevated and gentle and high class and well trained and all that. That's a Shudra. What we think of as Shudras aren't within Varnashram. They don't fit in Varnashram, like that. Because unless they have these qualities that we're talking about, then they don't fit in there. So this is Bhagavatam. So this is the society of devotees. You can lower this a touch when you're dealing with the you know, just the atheistic Varnashram system. But if you're dealing with Daiva, then this is standard, yes.
I said, where is this quote from?
Which part of these are from 11th canto.
Which chapter is that?
It says up. Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay, faith in Vedic civilization, right? I mean, as it is, devotees discuss whether we should follow it or not, right? So this is the first faith in this, that this is proper, because otherwise, how are you going to perpetually get the money and accumulate what you want unless you're pious? Money does not come by impious means. Somebody will say, oh, so many businessmen are not following Vedic culture and they're so rich, but that's coming from previous karma, not from today's karma. From today's karma, you can watch them in your own lifetime just disappear. Right? You can watch them. You don't even have to wait long time. You know, like Duryodhana, you had to wait so long. Right here, you don't have to wait. It's just you watch the big today, and after some time, then everything just drops off. Because what they're doing today is creating their future. And we see in the future they get a bad result. Like that. So it has to have faith in the Vedic civilization. they must be going on, because by giving money, then you get. And the better quality of persons that you give the money to, the more you get back. You give to a beggar or just an ordinary person, you get equal to what you give. You know, you give to you know, Brahman like this, then you get more, double. If you give to a qualified one who knows the Vedas and all this and that, you get more than that. Give to a Vaishnava, even more than that, unlimited. So those who are smart, then they're always happy to give in charity, because they'll never lose it, they'll always get it back. It's not lost. Right? And then freedom from hypocrisy, service to the brahmanas, like this. These are the natural qualities of the Vaishnavas. Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the Brahmins, and leadership are the natural qualities of the Kshatriyas. Like that. So we see in all these then the Brahminical culture is a central feature. It's very, very important. And then for the Brahmins, then that's basically the same as like in the Gita. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the Brahmanas. (coughs) 11:17, 15 through 21. Because he has to basically, you have to be able to distinguish between pious and impious. And then impious, you have to be able to distinguish between karma, jnana, and then between pious, means maturely pious, and spiritually pious, or devotional service. You have to be able to make these distinctions to be able to understand. Because you have to be able to first see there's piety and impiety in this world. Then you have to be able to see the difference between, if it's done for Krishna, it's piety, real piety, and if it's not, it's impiety. So you take step by step. So that's what's trying to be established here. Yeah. So it says the duties of Varnashrama are the root of following the scriptures and rules and regulation. A country is impious to the degree it does not follow Varnashrama. So that's the thing. If you want pious dealings and all that, so you either have to have on the high devotional level, which naturally includes the Varnashram aspects. It's just they're included there. They're the smaller aspect. The bhakti or the bhagavad is big. So it's automatically will be included. But to try to find piety outside the Varnashram system will be very, very difficult. Because whatever they're talking now about piety, what is the evidence for that? Why should it be accepted as piety? If someone says, well, you have to be nice to others, why? What is the reason you have to be nice? A lot of people aren't nice. So if it's by vox populi, so many people aren't nice. So then why should we accept this? You know? I mean, it sounds nice, you know, it's very poetic, but why? You know? They may say everybody knows or everybody, well, why? Right? No, in the scriptures, okay, in the Bible or the Quran, but is the what we have now is the original? How do we know what it looks like? Right? So much, and even historically, it changed so many times, so many different things. And then if we say, okay, yes, it's coming from them, but who gave the scripture? Somebody made it up? No, it's coming from God. Therefore, the being proper behaved with people, that is something valuable because it's come from God, it's God's direction. So the whole point is what is coming from God, that is what's useful. So then why accept a form, therefore in the beginning it was said, therefore the form of these rules and regulations that is practiced within the Vedic culture is the superior form, because it's the most directly revealed. It's the best of all the forms. You know, others are there, they have some part, but it's been changed according to the time, place, circumstance of the place. You know, and we may say, well, that's important, but then look at the places. Can we say anywhere in the world is so wonderful? We may say here is not so wonderful, but we already discussed that. That's already been influenced by these Western countries. So what is so wonderful about their place? A few nice cars, a few this, a few that. But at any moment, it's all gone. You know, it's not that they're, it's, you know, sacred, nothing happens. No one dies, no one gets shot, no one has an accident. You know? So what is it that's so special that therefore we have to consider the new, the world has changed, it's different, so therefore we have to, what is it? What has changed? It's changed for the better. So therefore, then these rules and regulations still, they still apply. One just has to have the proper understanding how to apply them like that. Because we can't apply them doesn't mean they're bad. Does that make any sense? So in other words, one has to understand the whole picture. So in this place, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving us the whole idea of the whole Vedic literatures and that. And we see that these three areas, karma, jnana, and yoga, I mean bhakti, this is what the Gita talks about. The first six are on karma, the last six are on jnana, and the middle six are on bhakti. So this is what the karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda, this is what the Vedas boil down to. So all these aspects are then dealt with in the Gita, as he explained, is that the essence of all these teachings are given in the Gita. Does that mean? Yes.
I don't know if I heard properly, but when he was referring to akarma, he said it's also inauspicious. Akarma, what is he referring to as akarma?
Akarma means is that you're not performing, see, there's two things, is that you can be performing an improper activity. Mm. So that is vikarma. Mm. Like that. So that's inauspicious activity. You know, like gambling, that's inauspicious. It's not pious. But then he also says akarma, meaning you're not doing your karma. So that's also not auspicious. Like Arjuna is not going to fight, he's just going to go off to the forest. He didn't do anything impious, but he didn't do anything pious either. So therefore, the result though, because it's not for the benefit of the individual or others like that, it's counted within impiety, because it's against the Vedic rules. It's not following the rules.
Action and inaction.
No, this is something else. See, we're just like you have an English word, it can be used in so many ways. Mm. So generally we see that akarma we're taking as meaning transcendental activity. Mm. Right? Karma, vikarma, and akarma. Mm. So that's one way of using the word akarma. But here akarma means you're not performing a pious activity, but you're not performing an impious activity, you're just being a lazy bum. You know, you're doing nothing. So doing nothing is useless. The jnanis are also doing nothing. Like that. Activity must be performed. You're going to perform. So if you perform akarma, means you're going to make up your own. So then what happens is, this is niyamagraha, is that you'll give up the rules and regulations, but then you'll make up your own. And when you make up your own, then it becomes one of these, you know, Kaitava Dharma is cheating, where you make up your own. You take the scriptures and make your own. You know, like that. So it becomes one of those impious. But the first step is that you're not doing the activity. And then, like a Brahmin, he's not doing his brahminical activities. So that's not good. Like that. But he'll have to do something, and then eventually you see he opens a business or something and takes up Vaishya Dharma. So it won't just stay, the living entity can't be inactive, they have to be active. So that's the point. So one must understand all these things. So therefore he's saying is the living entity in the beginning may be performing sinful activities, then they'll perform pious activities or karma. Then when he comes more elevated, then he'll perform karma yoga. So that karma fruitive activities will be done for the Lord, in connection with the Lord. Right? So in the beginning, there'll still be sakam. You want the results, but you're still, it's theistic. But then later, then it'll be done without. Right? Because then it gets mixed with gyan. And then it becomes, then that purifies one. Like that. So the whole idea is in the Daivavarna ashram, you have karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. And in the ordinary varnashram, then you have karma jnana. And their upasana, or worship, is of the demigods or the universal form for material benefits. So it's still just kind of a part of karma. Like that. Karma or jnana. Yes.
Question about varnashram.
About varnashram. Okay.
In the Vedic time, for example, in the life of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Ramachandra, I read in Ramayana, and they described Shudra, he was practicing meditation, and Ramachandra, he punished him. Was it sinful, or why? And is it sinful now to do some other varnas duty, or we don't have at all any varnasana?
Means, see, at the time, then the Shudra, he was performing these austerities, and things were starting to go wrong in the kingdom. Weather wasn't working properly, and auspicious signs came. So then Ramachandra, through his spies and other things, then tried to find out, if there anything going wrong somewhere in the kingdom? And then somebody came up that, yes, there's a Shudra, you know, hanging upside down from a tree over a fire, performing austerities.
He was practicing meditation.
Well, that's definitely, they'll have austerities means meditation. But meditating on what and for what purpose? Right? Meditation is actually done when you come to the point of dharana. Right? After dharana, then you can do dhyana. So that means you have to perform nishkam karma yoga to get to that platform. So that basically means you've practically come to the platform of liberation. So that means one has to have purified oneself, purified one's nature and everything like that. Then in that pure state, that meditation is very beneficial. But now they said a Shudra, right? So when they say he's a Shudra, that doesn't mean by birth, that means by qualities, right? So by qualities, he was a Shudra. And then he's performing meditation, means there's going to be no benefit to his meditation. One, he's not going to be meditating on the superstar. He's going to have some other purpose in mind. He's performing these austerities to get some power, to get some material facility. Right? You understand? Just like you have the Brahmins, then they knew how to use the Brahmastra. And it would be used properly in the warfare. And it wouldn't bother anybody. Nowadays, intellectuals have figured out how to use this Brahmastra, but it doesn't benefit anybody. Right? They can't control it. It just makes a mess of everything. So pious means it's good for the individual, good for others, good for the community, good for the nation, good, you know, like this. So therefore, when someone who's not qualified does the duties of someone else, then it makes a problem, because qualities must be there. Right? So it means how is this Shudra, you know, serving others? Right? He's supposed to be serving someone, respecting, but he's not. He's independently trying to create his own position. Therefore it's based on pride. And then that pride won't give a good result. But if he had a natural sattvic nature, even though he's born in a Shudra family, and he took to the processes of Astanga Yoga, or, you know, tapasya and these things, and then was meditating on the Lord, then he'd be known as a great sage or like this. So it's not what the background is; it's what is the mentality when it's being done. Right? Valmiki was a dacoit before. But by the association of Nard Muni, he became a great Vaishnava. So So no one worries about the past unless one acts improperly. Then they will say, well, what can they do if they were, you know, mixed birth or like that. So it's not a problem. Be careful, because this will drip. Here, will drip. You just make sure it's not going on your dhoti. It should go in there. Don't worry about it. Just make sure your dhoti's not underneath it. Means we have to unsee. It's a matter of whether we want to look at things in reality or not. You know? The modern thing is just not to look at it that way. You know? I mean, someone who's a thief, a rascal, a nonsense, or this and that, well, you have to understand them, and it's not their fault, and the society made them that way, and all this and that. Okay, that's fine. But what are they doing to change the society? You know, how are they going to change the society? The society's views are based on sinful activities. Then why it won't give, sinful results? So therefore it will create people like that. So unless you change the society. So we have to understand the difference between the Vedic society and the non-Vedic. And we have to have faith in that. So we just look at it realistically. These are the qualities. It just fits in there. There's no problem with it. There's no problem between one and the other. Like that. Everybody is serving, but it's just that why is one superior to the other? Because their purview of serving becomes greater and greater. Right? A shudra is serving a master. Right? But that master is getting so many things done. Right? And the higher up you go, the more they're doing. Vaishya's making so much money, giving so much in charity, so many people are being benefited. Kshatriya even more, he creates and protects the whole society in which the whole thing can flourish. And the Brahmins are giving the direction in which you can save yourself. Kshatriyas okay are creating the environment for Dharma to go on, in which you can perform this spiritual activity. But the so your body, your conditioned nature is able to thrive. And you can take up spiritual activities, but the Brahmins are giving that path by which you can perform that, and you can get out of this. So therefore, that's considered the highest, the most beneficial. And then you just see, because everybody's taking advantage of the other. It means all the money that's made in the whole social system is only made by the Vaishyas. They're the only ones that conceive of it. Shudras are working, but they're working for the Vaishyas. Kshatriyas are taking tax, but they're taking it from the Vaishyas. Brahmins are getting in charity, but they're getting it from the Vaishyas. Or from the Kshatriyas who already got their money from the Vaishyas. Right? So all money comes from them. So without them it won't function. But they have their part. Making money is important, but going back to Godhead is more. Right? Without the Kshatriyas protecting, none of the other three could perform their duties. Right? Without Shudras, how everyone else is going to function. The king can't function. The Vaishya should be sitting there himself selling all the saris. Right? He'd have to make the saris himself. He'd have to grow the cotton, pick the cotton, process the cotton, make it into thread, then sew it into saris, and then sell it. Right? So it's not very practical. So the shooters do all that, but they don't know how to organize their life. Vaishya organizes it for them. Then there's economic development. Right? Then the Brahmin gives directions for the Kshatriyas and all others how to perform their duties properly so that the society will go on, and they have that, they can connect it to the Lord. So it fits very nicely. So we just look at it and just say, okay, this is the situation.
And nowadays somebody is practicing meditation, do they get some benefits from that?
Meditation? Point is meditation means 24 hours. If you just do it for 2 minutes, it's not really meditation. It's focusing the mind a little bit, but it's not really meditation. It's something. But as a process, They could only do that in Treta Yuga. I mean, in Satya Yuga, because then they could completely focus like that for 24 hours a day. For years, all they did was meditate. They stopped breathing. They stopped eating. They didn't sleep anymore. They just sat there. That's meditation. You know what we do, you know, it's meditation, but it's not a form in which it itself is dynamic enough to take us back to Godhead. Means by that process of meditation before, they would see the Supersoul. Seeing the Supersoul, then they would surrender to the Lord, then they would take up devotional service. So for devotees, then meditation means thinking of the Lord within devotional service. So it's one of the many, many, many branches of devotional activities. So we're doing service to the Lord, so sometimes we're thinking of Him, sometimes we're singing, sometimes we're dancing, sometimes we're cooking, sometimes we're doing other work like this. And then with time, naturally it comes to the point where meditation is the main thing, because the perfected souls are always thinking of the Lord. But it's through the process of bhakti that we're going to get to that perfected stage of meditation. So a little meditation is fine. But if it's through the process of Astanga yoga, we'll get a little result. But see, meditation can't factually happen on the mechanical platform unless the breathing is stopped. While the air is moving in or out, the mind is a little bit disturbed. So if you actually want perfect meditation, the breathing has to be stopped, otherwise the mind will be restless. So that's the first thing you have to do, is stop the breathing. That doesn't mean for a minute or two, that means for years. It means it stopped. You know, you meditate for 10,000 years means you didn't breathe one breath for 10,000 years. Now, to stop the breathing, then you have to be able to practice the pranayama. Practice pranayama, you have to perform the asana perfectly. That means you can sit in your asana, you know, for 10,000 years without feeling any difficulty. So you have to perfect the sitting in that asana. And then to do that, you have to follow, you know, all the different rules and regulations, what to do, what not to do. Like that. And once you've stopped the breathing, then you have to pull in the senses. You have to focus the mind on one point. Then you can start to meditate. But otherwise, for a few moments, you know, we think about the deity, we're meditating on the deity, or remembering the spiritual master, focusing on a point in the scriptures. So that's devotional service, and it's greatly beneficial. But it's beneficial because it's in connection with devotional service. We shouldn't think that it's the meditation that is given in Astanga Yoga. It's not possible in this age. It can't be done. Does that make sense? It sounds good. Plenty of people make plenty of money off of it, but it's you know, business-wise it's viable, but actual perfection it's not. I mean, in this age, and having money is perfection, so that way it works. But you know, seeing the super soul doesn't work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, some people, they are using meditation to find out some information. Like they can go to some other place, travel and see the situation, what is going on there, something like that. Figure out some details, what happened exactly.
If that's what you want, means, see, we also use the situation to travel to other places to find out the details, but we use it for traveling to the spiritual realm. You know, just to find out things here, then, I mean, it's nice, but all that endeavor and focus can be distracting from the devotional process. You know, I mean, it may be nice if one hasn't taken up devotional service, or one already is able to do that before taking up devotional service, but once you take up devotional service, it's not such an important thing to develop. You know, because otherwise you just distract yourself. It's something, you know, interesting. You know, something unique, something others may not be able to do. So then there's always the tendency that the mind may get distracted by that, that we are very special and unique. That's the problem with this Brahmin here. He's born in a very high-class Brahmin family, very, very educated, very, very excellent singer, and he's very, very proud. Because others can't do it. How many people know all the raga-raginis? How many people are born in high-class Brahmin families? Even amongst Brahmins, there's levels of class. Then even of those born in those, how many are educated? That they really know the scriptures, and they've studied, and they've learned the Veda, and know how to do the ritual. So it's rare, very rare. Like that. So, and he's proud. So that's the problem. So that's why all this whole conversation's come up. So we have to be very, very careful. You know, I mean, someone who was into these things before, maybe if they can use them, great, but there's a lot of problem in there. You know? There's a lot of problem in there. So, because here, yeah. So it's, if they feel comfortable using that in Krishna's service, fine, why not? But at the same time, is you know, why not just focus more on sadhana and these things? Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Sometimes when we preach, we not preach directly Varanasi. We usually just tell devotees, the people, to chant Hare Krishna, and that's all. We never just say, you first to be like a proper person, you don't lie, don't do this, don't do that, and then become devotee. And then we never, and even after when they come to the temple, they be devotee for some time, we never put much emphasis on it. Usually I not hear it, at least. But to be like truthful, clean maybe, yeah, cleanness, yeah, but truthful and this and that, we usually not put emphasis on why is that, it's like, it just...
Because these are secondary. It means chanting and devotional activities are the primary. If those are performed, the others will come. But still, it must be by association. We have to just check, are we not preaching about these things because we ourselves don't know them? Or we're not preaching about these things because the person is not ready for it. Therefore, as they're ready, we're telling them. You know? So that you have to check. You know, it's like after prasad at the temple, is the temple room cleaned? And how clean is it? And who cleaned it? Then you can understand whether it was a planned thing to not talk about these things, or it's a matter of they don't know themselves. Right? Because all these qualities are all part of the Vaishnava culture. Like that Varnashram's source is from the Vaishnava culture. Because in the spiritual realm there is only Vaishnava culture, isn't there? There's no Mayavadi culture or Karmi culture or Jnani. There isn't. There's only Vaishnava culture. So therefore, whatever's here in the Varnashram, that has come from that, it's reflected from that. Right? But one has to be pure enough to take it. See, the Varnashram is for the conditioned nature. Right? But bhakti, devotion, is for the soul. Right? That's why you can run the two of them separately. It's not ideal, but it can be. Someone can be making advancement in spiritual life and not be really understanding or following the Varnashram system. The point is the Varnashram system is the ideal platform from which to perform the devotional activities, but it's not necessary. Devotion is separate. You can chant, you can do service, you can take prasad, you can do so many things, even though one is not, by conditioned nature, able to perform those activities. You know, one doesn't have that natural piety on the conditioned platform. Point is that from the mode of goodness, it's much easier to use that as a base for trying to get to pure goodness than to use passion or ignorance. Right? Because the tendency, passion or ignorance, will distract one from pure goodness. Right? Because pure goodness means without passion or ignorance. Right? So goodness is practically pure, but there is a touch of passion and ignorance. So to go from having a touch of passion and ignorance to practicing going into no passion or ignorance is much easier than situating yourself in a lifestyle of passion or ignorance and then trying to go to pure goodness is maintained. But it has to be done in the right mentality, as the Bhagavatam points out. Like that. Therefore, then, the proper relationships between the members of the community is established. And then everything works very nicely. Right? then it works nicely. But if it's not, if it's done out of pride and all those qualities that it mentioned, then even you're seemingly following Varnashram. But if you're doing it with those, you know, the non-Vedic mentality, then it still will create a problem. Because then, you know, the different positions and all that, and money and manpower, all that will be used, you know, for political or other kinds of ways. You know, political meaning outside of the normal Varnashram activity. You know, politics will be there, but it's not within, it's not pious. Like that. So, whatever, it's an offering to Krishna. So even if something is done in passion or ignorance, if it's offered to Krishna, then that's the perfection of that activity. But that does not mean that that itself is the most perfect activity. Right? An action performed in passion, done for the in passion, is imperfect. But the best application of that is that passion is then used in Krishna's service. So it's the perfection of that passion. But it doesn't mean that that activity performed in passion is the perfect activity. That's the thing. You understand?
And so both should go together.
That's best. It's just like, let's say, you know, you don't have, you know, you go outside and, you know, you find a potato and it's, you know, half rotten and, you know, somebody just stepped on it, but that's all you got, so you wash it off and clean it up, you know, and half of it you can cook and offer to Krishna. Okay, that's the perfection of that potato, you know, is that it's been used in the Lord's service. But that's not the most perfect offering you could have made. You know what I'm saying? So as a beginning, fine, that's great. But after a while, you can't just go on and just, when it comes time for an offering, then you just go out and look for some rotten potatoes. Well, that's what I used, you know, 5 years ago. So, I mean, what's the problem, you know? I mean, when Prabhupada was here, we used to offer rotten. We used to go out into the cemeteries and steal the flowers. So what's the problem? Right? Yes. But you have to take, what's the essence? What was going on when Prabhupada was here? Things were being offered to Krishna. Our endeavors were being given to Krishna. We were trying to give whatever is the best we had for Krishna. So because we were Yahoo hippies, therefore we went into cemeteries and stole the flowers. You know? Okay, so that's perfection of hippiedom. Right? But that doesn't mean hippiedom is the perfection of offerings to the Lord. We can also offer things within the human platform. You know what I'm saying? You know, human life can also be offered to the Lord. It doesn't have to be below human life. Right? So we have to be able to grow up. You know? It's just like, everything goes both ways. Just like it says, the 10 offenses should be avoided. So you don't blaspheme devotees. Right? But that's one side of it. But the real side of it is you should be glorifying devotees and appreciating devotees. Right? That's the real thing. So like you have the example of the, I can't remember what it is. You know, the one about the mother when she was a small child, she used to go naked, but she doesn't go naked now. You know? What's one of the logics like that. You remember that?
I don't remember the Sanskrit.
Yeah, but it's one of the logics. Is that okay, when she was little then she was going naked, so therefore, we know her. She used to walk around naked. No, but now she's a grown woman, has children, you know, all these things. No, but when she was young she was naked, you know. But you know, it's not, so it goes the other way. She shouldn't think, well, when I was young I was naked and everything was okay, so now when I'm big I can go around naked and everything should be okay. White people are complaining. You know, they didn't complain then. Why are they complaining? So, because it's expected one will mature. By the process of devotional service, jnana and vairag automatically come. Right? Bhagavatam is saying that. So then you should apply that jnana and vairag. And then that will then mature us and elevate us out of this material world. Otherwise it will tend to keep us in the material world. So the whole idea is we have to distinguish between kinds of work. That's intelligence. That's what intelligence is for. Is telling the difference between something. So we tell the difference between within matter. You know, what's good and bad matter, what's favorable and unfavorable matter. You know, then we have to be able to distinguish what's the difference between matter and spirit. Right? And then so what matter can be used in pursuance of spirit, what matter cannot be used. Okay, so we distinguish. So we have to use our intelligence. We're using our intelligence anyway. So then better it's being used to figure out how to elevate ourselves and go back to Godhead. Right? Otherwise, if we don't use it, then we're going to use the intelligence anyway. And then the tendency will be for, you know, other purposes. So therefore, better to use it this way. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes, ma'am.
If I would understood, you said that we have to apply regulations properly in our life. And then just one question appeared that if many of us are on the level lower than the Shudras, how we can properly apply for regulatory principles? Because in this modern time, they say that actually these principles are for Brahmanas and Kshatriyas.
No, they're for everybody. The four regulative principles are for everybody, like that, because just like we see before, is what we have up here. That's wrong. Nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. Right. So that's the proper. I mean, is it the difference between when it comes to, you know, sex between the varnas is the dvijas or the Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas will follow Garbhadhan samskar. While the Shudras have a tendency to just get too over enthusiastic and then next thing they know is the wife's pregnant. Right? It's not planned like the others. So there's sense control, but it's not as controlled as those others. So this idea of the Brahman, this is just cheap things to say, it can't be done, therefore it's all right that I'm doing nonsense. That's all. We have to distinguish between it's like the story of sour grapes. You know, yeah, that thing in the Western, you have the wolf saw these sour, or the fox saw these grapes and it started jumping, trying to get them, but they were too high for it, so then it said, they're sour anyway, can't be done, they're no good anyway. So the whole point is this, they feel that they cannot do or don't want to do, therefore, you know, nobody can do. Like that. It's not for this age. Of course it's for this age. Why is so much of that going on? Because it's advertised. Everybody, you want anything, there has to be somebody half-dressed to sell it. Right? It's not a natural thing. It's not natural. It's being forced. You know? So if we want to absorb ourselves in these things, you know, watching the television and reading all the different periodicals and all the different novels and all these things, then we'll be bombarded by it so much it may be very difficult to follow. But that's our choice. You know, if you put yourself in a dangerous situation like that, then it may be difficult. But the point is why say it's, you know, okay, no. Then say at least it's for Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. That minimum. Why just Brahmins? Because then it's, I can be a Kshatriya or I can be a Vaishya. And still maintain some status. Okay, I'm not a Brahmin. Okay, that's okay. But who wants to be a Brahmin nowadays? They don't have any money, they have no control, so it's not a big deal. No, okay, back when Prabhupada was here, it was a big deal to be a Brahmin. But nowadays, we're more realistic. And, you know, it's like they got no money and got no position anyway, so who cares? They know a little scripture. You know, okay, they can give a little class, big deal. You know, the real thing is the men and the money. So that's where the Kshatriya, that's the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. So I can maintain my dignity because it's for Brahmins, okay, but I'm Kshatriya and Vaishya. No, Vedic standard is Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they could follow this. Shudras maybe or maybe not follow. So then, yes, say, okay, you can't follow, fine. But just admit that you're on this platform, Shudra or lower. That they want to. Oh, this is fanatical, talking about this, that. Prabhupada didn't say it. Because prestige is so deeply rooted in the heart of the living entity. They just don't want to see things as they are. So, you know, we come from bad backgrounds, bad samskaras, fine. But are we supposed to be, is the first generation supposed to be the leading, you know, lights in the Sankirtan mission forever? It's not supposed to pass on to the second and third generations and forth. First generation will always be coming in. Prabhupada said, our children's children will be able to, you know, light fire by mantra. He didn't say that about first generation. So it may take some time. Okay, even if we say that. But unless we're trying for it, you're not going to get anything. Right? Unless you endeavor, you get nothing. There's not one successful person in this world that just says, oh, it's not possible, and just sits back and thinks that they'll be fortunate. They work hard to try to get what they want. And then they may get it or they may get close to it. But at least they tried. Prabhupada always says, shooter and users. Then everybody will say, well, at least they tried. And if one's tried and one's not successful, then that's themselves as an individual. That's not everybody. They can't think they're so proud that because they couldn't do it, nobody can do it. Right? One shouldn't be that proud. One should feel, okay, myself, at this particular stage in my life, I have not done so well, but I have to keep trying. If I'm going to get the goal, I have to keep endeavoring. Right? Otherwise, then we just sit back and then what? If I sit back and do nothing, that's akarma. So I'll live off my previous karma today, and it may be nice, but eventually that good karma from the past will run out, and then I've done nothing, so then I'm going to get nothing. Right? If I do nothing today, it means tomorrow I have nothing. And what I'm getting today is just to spread over some time. Does that make any sense? So these are cheap ideas. Like that. It means people have been having problem with these things since the Vedic times. Otherwise, why does the Vedas deal with these things? Why does the Vedas have chapters on, what's it called when the husband or wife is off with someone they shouldn't be? Adultery. Oh, why is there a chapter on adultery? It was going on. These things are always going on. But it's a matter of one is trying to not do these things. And that is what's beneficial. That endeavor to do what is proper. That is what purifies us, that's what uplifts us. That endeavor, that desire. But if we just sit back and say it's not possible, yes, not possible. For monkeys. Right? Even lions control themselves. Baba said that's why the lion is the king. They have sex once a year. Monkeys are not considered the king. So, that is there. So the whole point is it's not something to make anyone feel bad or this or that. The point is that we should not be proud. Right? Someone should not be proud of being able to follow because that ability to follow is coming from Krishna. And someone shouldn't be proud that they are not able to follow, therefore the whole universe can't follow. And even if we say, yes, it's only for Brahmins, Prabhupada said this is a society of Vaishnavas and Brahmins. So therefore, the main personalities, then they should be this. Community may be so many things. But your temple devotees, your leaders, that they should be Vaishnavas and Brahmins. Like that. So it just comes down to a reality of understanding where we are. If we can't understand our conditioned nature in this way, how are we going to understand where we are in the whole process from Shraddha to Prema? Because we won't be able to accept, yes, I have anarthas. I have to get rid of them. That is the very major step in the sadhaka's life, is to accept that I have impurities in my heart and I have to give up these impurities, and I'm going to endeavor to give up these impurities, and then by that endeavor then we advance and Krishna fulfills. It's said when Krishna sees the living entity is desirous of that, then he fulfills those desires. But if the living entity is just thinking, yes, it can't be done by anyone, then Krishna will arrange, yes, you will not be able to follow. That's your desire. But if you want to follow, even though there may be met much difficulty, it eventually will be able to follow. So that's why the rules are there, put into place, to keep us from falling. Right? Just look at what it's for. Right? What's the purpose of sex? Do a good time. Or is some result from sex? Right? Any result? Other than to take it for something. Means children come. So now, if you have a set of adults whose interest in sex is sense enjoyment, then when they conceive a child, what will be the mentality of the child? Is there any connection? Yes, no? Right? So there's a connection. So they're going to create a very, you know, low-class child whose only interest is sense gratification. Right? So that is, you know, so in the Western culture this may be considered very, very noble. You know, there's one novel story was called The Scarlet Letter, right? So there was this lady who came to America. Her husband was coming later, he was busy. And then she bumped into this priest. He didn't know that she was already married. She didn't know he was a priest. You know, the next step you can understand. And then there's a whole story of this and that until they all found out. And somehow or another, they got out of the whole thing and went off and settled in another part of America. So the whole story is being told by the daughter. And so then she's talking about that love of her parents that's burning within her heart. You know, and it's considered a very noble and romantic and wonderful story. But the lust of the parents, how she was conceived, is burning in her heart, and it's considered something very wonderful. You know, because there's some, at least some emotion is there. They're not just, you know, completely dead matter. But so it's considered wonderful. But in the Vedic culture, it's not considered so great. Right? It means there's other emotions in that are considered more important. You know, than you just have a burning lust in your heart all the time. But whatever. That's the problem. Background you come from, all these things are romanticized and made as something very wonderful and nice. You know? But the point is there's something more. Right? Is the topmost relationship between the husband and wife is that one body touches another? Right? The wonderful thing about the wife is her body. Or the wonderful thing about the husband is his body. Right? Is that the real thing? You've married two bodies. You don't have to really consider the subtle body. Right? And so, okay. So then even we consider that, but how much can you keep them together? Right? I mean, John Lennon tried. 1 week they stayed in bed, but it was 1 week and that's it. Then they had to get out of bed. You know? They couldn't last in bed more than a week. You get bored of it, tired of it, sick of it. You know, there's other needs of the living entity. There's a mind, there's intelligence, there's ego. I mean, there's other things in life other than just the senses, just the skin. So then, how are those to be dealt with? And which is considered higher? Emotional exchange or sensual exchange? Right? If somebody gives up some proper etiquette or behavior for some sensual activity, is it considered good? Right? You have somebody, let's say you have a minister for the country, and then they're engaged in some sensual activity or taking money or off with prostitutes or, you know, some, is it considered good? No. So therefore, the higher sense of duty is the more important of the relationship. So that means the relationship between husband and wife is more than just two bodies. But there's emotional respect and exchange that's there, duties. So based on what the Varnashram gives, that there's duties of the husband and wife and respect towards each other. And then in that emotional exchange, the senses are also included. Okay? The emotions include the senses, but the senses don't include the emotions. That's the difference. Right? So, therefore, these kind of statements are not of a very high caliber, because they're not actually taking to consider the real nature of the living entity. They just propagate the modern theories of just, you know, sense enjoyment is the topmost. Or as in Bhagavad Gita, it's said that, you know, it's thought that sex is the perfection. You know, when it's talking about the impious nature, that the whole world, everything's running on sex. Everything's sex. There's something beyond that. There's something higher than that. May not be perceivable, but there is. You know, like that. There's a higher that has much deeper impact. Sex will be forgotten about, but other emotional exchanges will not be forgotten about. You know, people today, they're still alive or still remember that comrade who saved them in World War II. You know, but the sex that they had with the French prostitutes, that they don't remember. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much. And I also have one question long time in my mind. What is the point, actually? I can understand what is the point of celibacy life in the male body, but I just cannot understand what is the point of celibacy life in the woman body, because nobody ever spoke about this.
So you're saying...
What is the point? How you make this transformation?
No, but you're talking about it should be there or not be there.
If we practice in this body, what we actually can achieve? Because in male body, you can get more spiritual intelligence if you're practicing celibacy life because of physical things which is happening in the body. But I don't understand it in the female.
You see, I say, the focus of emotions. See, it's the, how you say? See, basically you can take two moods, right? Because within the definition of manu, which Prabhupada then gives in the Gita, someone who is having sexual relationships only for the purpose of producing religious children, you know, according to the religious process of Garbhodan, that's still considered celibacy. Right? One's still considered brahmachari. Right? So you have the term grihastha brahmachari. So someone may have 10 children, but if it's done according to the rules, it's considered they're still brahmachari. Because their whole purpose is Brahman, to elevate themselves. Like that. So therefore they're following the rules and regulations. So in the same way is for the women, it would be the same. If it's according to religious principles, then they're still considered celibate. So that aspect is there. So now Bhagavatam describes these two mentalities. You know, we're speaking from the scriptures, is that there's that of the mother and that of the tigress. So the mother means the focus is on the emotional platform. The tigress, it means it's on the sensual platform. So the tigress doesn't really do any benefit for the society at all, but and is not respected. It means some may respect, they're very attractive, and you know, whatever it is. But actually, it's not really a deep respect. But someone who's cultivated that mood of mother, right? That they're respected by all. I mean, in the proper human society, then the women are all respected because of that nature. Because you're a mother of anybody. You have that relationship with anybody. Motherhood is not restricted to biological. It's one of the eight kinds of mothers. So therefore, then that's beneficial for the whole society. Because mother means nourishment, right? And nourishment comes from activities. So it's an essential point of the whole process is activity, nourishment, like this. So in this way, then they benefit themselves, they benefit their children who grow up into a proper, they benefit the husband, they benefit their family, they benefit the community. All this. It's just like it said that if you have one sandalwood tree in a forest, the whole forest becomes fragrant. Right? So if you have one good woman in a family, the whole family becomes glorious. But if you have one bad woman, she can destroy the whole family. Just like one small little fire inside the hollow of one tree in a forest can destroy the whole forest. Same way with a bad son or a bad boy. It's the same principle. So therefore the Vedic culture puts so much emphasis on these things. So celibacy means we have to understand what that means. Celibacy doesn't mean not having children, but it must be according to religious principles. That's celibacy. Like that. That is what's practiced. And if someone, just due to previous karma, you know, previous activities or understandings, you know, then they don't want to get involved in all this thing and don't have attraction for it and don't have the need for it, then fine, why bother? But it's generally very rare. Yeah. It's generally rare. So it's not so important. The women don't have to worry about it. So they just have to worry about maintaining celibacy, meaning they only have children according to religious principles. Like that. And it's possible. The emotional exchange is the most important. Nowadays, emotional exchange is not there so much. Therefore, you know, sensual exchange is at least better than nothing. Because, okay, you connect the senses and the emotions are very tightly connected in with the women. Men, they're kind of like separate. With the women, they're connected. Okay, so you go about it backwards. You know, instead of from emotion to senses, you go from senses to emotion. Okay, it's better than nothing. But it's actually not, it's not recommended. It's not very good. Does that make any sense? Or?
I want us to focus on this introduction. Where are we going from here?
Where are we going from here? We'll have to find out as we go. Because it's like, as we're reading it, it's happening.
It's very amazing that we started off on such a high platform talking basically.
It'll come back to that. But it's just, the point is just like in Gita, you start off with the pastime and then they show the activity and then immediately get into bhakti. Then after they can show the fine points. Because until you've understood what is the essence, there's no use in describing technical fine points, otherwise you get distracted by them. like that. You'll take that as the important, the essence. You know, it's like situating myself in the mode of goodness is the most important thing. No, that's just part of the process. You know, so you get into a technical point and you get distracted by it. So the jnana takes one away from Krishna. So therefore, then these things come up. Plus, the natural thing is if you're writing, you know, a book like this, you have to address who you're. You know, this is a book for Vaishnavas. You know, and then it catches their attention, and you know they see where it's going. So all the essential points, and now they're describing all these things. So what's already been described before is now being described in detail. Like, you know, like before it was the dress. So how do we understand the dress? So all this is done. So it's a fine point. That was a like the seed. Because he's saying he's heard all this from his spiritual master. So that means there's one, either more conversations that are in this book, which would be natural, or two, is by what was said before, that seed that was planted by his sadhana and by his, you know, contemplation, then he's been able to understand all these things. Yeah? Because before he joined, before he became a devotee, he had already, you know, studied all the scriptures and all this. And it means if he was studying Vedanta Sutra, he already knew all these other scriptures before. You know, so then they get these conclusions. Because one has to understand this. So, see, there's two ways of going about it. The Vedic is start from the top, come down. And the contemporaries generally start from the bottom and go up in description. Just like you'll generally see when we describe Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam, we'll generally start with Kanista, then Madhyam, then Uttam. But generally in the scriptures, it'll always tell you what is Uttam, then what is Madhyam, then Kanista. Because if you understand Uttam, you understand what's the devotee. Then you understand what's lacking that's there in the Madhyam that has to be perfected, and what's in the Kanista has to be perfected. Otherwise, you just think Kanista is perfectly normal, and then the next step is Madhyam, and that's perfectly normal, then Uttam. You know, Uttam's the proper standard, Madhyam's less, Kanista's less. Like that. But also, sometimes when you're logically going through, you can present it the other way. But it's not unnatural to start from the top and come down. The top in seed form, then come down into detail from the lower form and bring it back up to the top, and then get into detail in the top. So that appears that that's what he's doing. Okay. Because you want to get the persons to understand the points immediately. Right? Then after that, then you can start expanding each point. But if you give the synopsis of the whole thing that they understand and grasp it, and they understand the importance of devotional service, take up devotional service, then that's good. That's best. Then from there, depending upon the individual, they may need to get into more detail or not. You know, you may tell them that you always chant Hare Krishna, and they just always chant. So you don't have to get into and explain to them so many benefits and so many different things, because they're just doing it. But maybe some other aspect is not coming so well. Therefore, you get into the technical points and understand and take them through the stages. And does that make some sense? So we should end here. Sorry if we were overly blunt in some of the answers, but time is short. They say issues are strong and quite prevalent, so you know, sometimes the direct form. It says here it should be simple straightforwardness, but I don't know if that was necessarily simple, but may have been straightforward. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda ki, Chinese I go to.